Yeah, I mean, I was itching the day after the AFC Championship game to get back to football. Watching the Super Bowl, I like, kind of watched it, but at the same time, I couldn't watch it because I was so disappointed that we weren't there. And then this whole offseason is just training and trying to restrain myself from throwing too much, restrain myself from doing too much, because it's a steady process and you don't want to peak too soon. You want to make sure that you're building and building, and that's the thing. When you're that close, you want to get back in the building and get right back after it. It's not talked about a lot about not winning that game, but it's talked about we need to take that next step. We need to get to the Super Bowl. That's the goal. There's no other goals. It's finding ways to win games. It's finding ways to position yourself the right way and finding ways to get to that Super Bowl and find a way to win that when you get there.
Why in the world would I lead off with a Patrick Mahomes cut today on the Sports Ticket, Dusty? Any ideas?
Well, the draft's coming up, and if we're thinking about football, and the Chiefs made a trade yesterday, that's the...
I think the first answer would be the trade for Frank Clark.
Yes.
It's all about winning a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It's all about winning a Super Bowl. And Patrick Mahomes said in that comment three times, Super Bowl. It's all about the Super Bowl. We didn't get caught up in the loss. We got caught up in the fact that we were one step away from our goal. And that's what this is all about. And that's why we lead off with the Chiefs today on the Sports Ticket, because it is a huge story. It is the lead story in the National Football League, and that's the Chiefs ponied up $105 million, although none of that, not all of that's guaranteed,
yeah.
About $63, $64, $65 million, depending on the reports. And made a trade, which takes away some of the excitement of tomorrow night for the Chiefs fans, completely gone, because the 29th overall pick in the first round of the draft, the Chiefs shipped to the Seattle Seahawks for Frank Clark, who's a defensive end, 25, soon to be 26, second-round draft pick out of Michigan, 13 sacks last year. I've seen a lot of Chiefs fans go, why didn't we just re-sign Dee Ford? Okay, Dee Ford isn't nearly as good of a player as Frank Clark. Frank Clark can rush the passer, he can stunt, he can twist, he can defend the run, which Dee Ford could not do, and Frank Clark has been healthier than Dee Ford. So Frank Clark is a better player. In essence, what the Chiefs did was they got Ford, they traded Ford, they got Clark, they got a second-round pick for Ford, they lose a first and a second. So basically what they did was basically a draft pick and then ponying up the money to Frank Clark instead of giving the money to Dee Ford. Listen, if they had to choose between the two, I would choose Frank Clark to be the one that gets the money. There are reasons to be concerned about this deal. There are reasons to be ecstatic about this deal if you're a Chiefs fan. If you were like me, and I've been pleading for the Chiefs for the last 2 to 3 years to improve the defense and not be predictable, then the Chiefs have addressed defense without question this offseason. They have basically revamped their defensive personnel on the defensive front on the ends. They're changing to a 4-3 scheme. They hired a new defense coordinator. They picked up an outstanding safety who can play multiple positions. He's a multidimensional player in Tyrann Mathieu, who they signed to a 3-year, $42 million deal, which I didn't think was breaking the bank. But the Frank Clark deal is huge. It is huge in so many ways. If you listen to the show on a regular basis, I am not a big fan of giving 5-6 year deals and $100 million to anybody in sports, but especially in the NFL, for anybody other than a franchise quarterback. How did the Justin Houston deal work out? Not so great. How did the Eric Berry deal work out? Not so great. I like Matthew's deal because 3 years, $42 million. That's not his long-term commitment. 2 years, $24 million for Okafor, the defensive end they got from New Orleans. Why did the Chiefs go after Frank Clark? Well, Frank Clark fits what the Chiefs want to do, and Dee Ford didn't. This is what the thing that people and Chiefs fans that aren't staying up to speed on this, they just look at it once again and don't want to gather the information. Or maybe you don't have time, and that's why we are here to provide that information. But there are folks that just believe, well, we just could have re-signed Dee Ford and saved our draft picks. First of all, you wouldn't have got a second-round pick from the 49ers because you wouldn't have got rid of Ford. But you've changed your defense. Do you know you got a new defensive coordinator, Chiefs Kingdom? Because you do. And Steve Spagnuolo likes Frank Clark a lot. And if he didn't, the Chiefs would have been crazy to make this trade. So if you don't know the deal, the Chiefs have gone ahead and made the trade with the Seattle Seahawks yesterday, right before the draft. Clark, who had yet to sign his franchise tag, has agreed to a 5-year, $105.5 million deal that includes $63.5 million guaranteed, He signed it with the Chiefs. Chiefs, once they knew they had that signed, that finished the deal. The Chiefs part with their first-round draft choice, which, let's be honest, is a late first-round pick. It's not like the Chiefs are trading away a top 15 pick.
They're somebody trading... yesterday says it's a crucial first-round pick. I'm like, it's the 29th pick.
It's the 29th pick.
It's not the not even in the top 15. We're okay there.
And when I saw this deal originally, I thought the Chiefs will have to give up a first, and then they'll have to sign Clark to a long-term deal. The thing that I don't like so much is I didn't think we needed to give up a second, too. We gave up a first this year and a second next year. I thought that was one pick too many. But at the same time, you've got a guy that's only 25. The Chiefs will send the lower of their two 2020 second-round draft picks to the Seahawks. So when you traded D4, that allowed you to get a second second-round pick for next year, which gave you the flexibility to trade one of your two second-round picks next year to the Seahawks to consummate this deal. And still, the Chiefs next year will have a first-round pick. They'll have a second-round pick unless Brett Veach trades again next year. Brett Veach likes to trade. Mm. He's very aggressive. He said that last week in his presser. And so Frank Clark says, I feel like I'm good. I wanted to be somewhere where I'm wanted, where I'm appreciated. I thank God that Casey came in and showed that in life. You just want to be shown that you're appreciated sometimes. I feel like this was one of those things. So he will fly to Kansas City to take a physical to finalize the trade. As long as he passes that physical, the deal is done. The money is just a little bit more than DeMarcus Lawrence for the Cowboys, but DeMarcus Lawrence got a little bit more in guaranteed money. Clark has 36 sacks in four NFL seasons, and he had 13 last season as the Chiefs add a pass rusher, but he's also a more complete player. So you may say, is it worth it? Well, it's an interesting article, and I posted this online, and a few people didn't understand why I posted it after the trade happened, and I thought it was probably clear, but it wasn't.
I did.
You got it. I posted this story right after the Chiefs traded Frank Clark because I came across this story after the Chiefs had traded Frank Clark. And it's at arrowheadaddict.com. And it said, the title of the article, which was posted the day before or earlier yesterday morning before the trade was made for Frank Clark of the Seahawks, the article's title is Why the Kansas City Chiefs Should Not Trade for Frank Clark. Okay, so in the article, I'll give you some of the bullet points. They say there are different factors on why some teams aren't going after Frank Clark. The most important part for Kansas City in particular is the issue of Clark's past. Before Clark was drafted in the second round of the 2015 NFL draft, he had multiple run-ins with law enforcement. The first incident happened during Clark's 2012 college season. He was charged with a felony for home invasion. Clark was sentenced to 1 year probation after the event, but was still allowed to play that season for the Michigan Wolverines. Clark was again found himself arrested in 2014 after being involved in a domestic violence incident. This ended with Clark only pleading guilty for disorderly conduct, but the officers that investigated the incident disagreed with the prosecution's assessment of the situation. Clark is also not a fan of rehashing his past. When reporter Natalie Weiner happened to bring these incidents up while writing about Greg Hardy, Frank Clark decided to send her this tweet. People like you don't have long careers in your field. I have a job for you cleaning my fish tank when that job is over. Now, that was in 2017, so about 2 years ago. He ended up apologizing for the tweet, but that's not the only social media fiasco that Clark had issue with in 2017. He also punched fellow teammate Jermaine Ifedi in the face during a training camp fight with the Seahawks, which caused Ifedi to miss some time while his mouth healed. And the point of the article is, you know, it's one thing for a team to go after Frank Clark. It's another if it's the Chiefs, because the Chiefs have problems. Right now, they're still trying to figure out what's going on with Tyreek Hill, who they drafted in the fifth round when other teams wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole. He's currently in the midst of a juvenile court case that has caused him to temporarily lose custody of his son. This is also coming after the Chiefs had to release star running back Kareem Hunt for kicking a woman in a hotel during the offseason last year. Adding Clark to the roster right now would be a gigantic PR nightmare for the Chiefs, especially at the reported price of a first and a second round pick. Even if none of the off-the-field issues bother Brett Veach, the GM and the company, what the Seahawks are asking for is steep, the first round pick and a second round pick, so forth and so on. So those are a few things that were brought up. And at the end of the day, the Chiefs said, we're okay with it. Now, let's present something that was not in that article. about Frank Clark. First of all, the things I mentioned was 2012 in that article, 2014, and 2017. All right? And I remember reading this a few months ago, and I was like, man, I feel for this guy. Little did I know he was going to be a Chiefs player and get $100 million, and the Chiefs would trade for him before the draft. Frank Clark, last summer, so it would have been the summer of 2018 or maybe the summer before, his father and three of his family members were killed in a house fire in Cleveland. He lost all of those people all at once. And so Frank Clark has dealt with that as a man, and he became a leader for the Seahawks on defense and spoke in front of the team's rookie defensive lineman and talked about what he lost. And the crux of his message was this: cherish relationships while you still can. You never know when you'll lose a loved one. And he's very emotional about that, as you can imagine. For Frank Clark and his dad, there was no chance for a final goodbye. The fire broke out overnight. It killed his dad, a couple of children, and his uncle, it appears. His great aunt survived. She jumped out of a second-story window. He still has questions about that. He believes it was arson, but there's nothing that's been proven to be that way. Mm. So he's still carrying that weight with him and will for the rest of his life. And sometimes that can make you grow up as a person or set you straight, or it could put you, it can make you spiral out of control too. It can go either way.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank Clark so far has handled this very, very well. So when you talk about off the field issues for Frank Clark coming to the Kansas City Chiefs, yeah, there are a few incidents. There's nothing as bad as what Tyreek Hill did before the Chiefs drafted him. There's nothing as bad, as far as we know, what he's done that Kareem Hunt did. Guys can get fights in scrimmages, in training camp. It happens, okay? Guys get sick of each other.
Oh, yeah.
They can't wait to play somebody else. So I don't hold that thing against Frank Clark. The domestic assault charge that was basically dropped and he pled guilty to disorderly conduct, that's the one that sticks out to me, because it applies to Tyreek Hill. We know the NFL has been trying to crack down on this. And Kareem Hunt, by the way, was not domestic assault, all right? It was assault. There's a difference between domestic violence, and that wasn't somebody he knew that well or anything when that happened, not to condone what he did. And the Chiefs let him go, not because of what he did, supposedly, but because he lied to them about everything. So we got to let the Tyreek Hill situation play out, as we talked about. And I think we need to let this play out. Well, we have no choice. We got to let Frank Clark's situation play out as well. So with the background and giving a little bit of information about Frank Clark, he's an outstanding football player. He's still young. He seems to be motivated. And he could be that missing piece for the Chiefs defense to get them over the hump and knock off the Patriots. But he does have some stuff in his life, like everybody does, but maybe not to the extent he does, maybe more of an extent than he does. And so it'll be interesting how he fits in for the Chiefs in the locker room. I think he'll be fine. I don't think he's a loose cannon. But I will say the Chiefs gave up quite a bit to bring in Frank Clark, because I think the Chiefs are going to be, I thought they were going to be better defensively with the moves they made, plus what they could do in the draft. And they want to sign Chris Jones to a long-term max contract, it looks like, or extension. That's going to cost a lot of money. Now, I think the Tyreek Hill, it'd be interesting. I would love to ask Brett Veach this question. The Tyreek Hill situation, you were originally planning on giving him a long-term deal, and you were talking about it. Then the thing happened at his home, and it's being investigated, and we don't know if Tyreek Hill's guilty of anything or not.
Mm-hmm.
But I would think that would cause you to have a long pause before you give him a lot of money or a $100 million deal. Reports were a $100 million deal for Tyreek Hill before that all came out a few months ago.
Yes.
I just wonder if the Tyreek Hill situation, the Chiefs have already decided, which I would have a long time ago, I'm not giving Tyreek Hill a long-term extension. We're automatically franchising him next year if he's even on the team. And now we don't have to worry about giving $100 million to Tyreek Hill, because we never will. And now we suddenly can go after Frank Clark. Because had nothing happened with Tyreek Hill and his son and everything was great, and the Chiefs gave Tyreek Hill a $100 million extension, I don't think the Chiefs could have been even able to do this deal.
No,
Frank
I don't
Clark.
Either. Yeah, I don't either. I think that ship sailed pretty quick for Tyreek Hill.
I think so.
And now you, with everything that's going on, you're obviously not going to do it right now. And by the time everything plays out on that, you understand that this season's probably gone for anything like that.
Right.
So you've got that money that you were originally going to spend.
You can spend it elsewhere.
And if I want to spend it elsewhere, I can. If I don't, I don't have to. But if I want to, I can. Mm-hmm. And then I can rework things next year if I feel like I want to still do that for Tyreek Hill. I can try to, you know, shed some money here and there, just like they did this offseason. You know,
it's going to be really tough, though, with Mahomes on the horizon.
Exactly. So, you know, I think that's the key there is – that they have it, and so they felt like they could spend it probably. I'm not a huge fan of it, of that much money to a defensive end, but if they have it and that's what they want to do, if they feel that's going to help them become a better team and contend for a Super Bowl right away, then it's hard to argue with it.
What's funny is us fans and sports talk show hosts are the same way, and we kind of lose track of this. Why do we care if Lamar or Clark Hunt wants to pay $63 million in guaranteed money? It's not our money. Why do we care? Well, here's why we care. If it affects you from spending elsewhere, which, you know, the guaranteed money up front doesn't count against the cap. So if it is a contract that is cap friendly for the Chiefs or backload or whatever you want to do, that's why the guaranteed money up front, the signing bonus, is so huge, because NFL contracts are not guaranteed. So when Justin Houston didn't get $101 million, that's what he signed, 6 years, $101 million. Mm-hmm. He didn't get all that because the Chiefs cut him loose in this offseason. Frank Clark, if he might play two really good years, he may not see $20 to $30 million of this. He might end up getting $75 to $85 million, but $63 million is guaranteed right now. If he tears up his ACL tomorrow after he passes a physical and signs on the dotted line, he's guaranteed the $65 million. And trust me, the Chiefs have insurance against this as an organization, as does every NFL and professional team, when you have these big contracts. So they're protected to an extent. But for me, to answer my own question, is that if you spend a lot of money and it hurts you against the cap, that prevents you from improving in another area. So I'm not against Clark Hunt spending all the money in the world that he wants to spend, but there is. He can't be the George Steinbrenner of the Yankees back in the day.
Not baseball.
It's not baseball. And in baseball, there's a lot of penalties now, too. There's not a cap, but there is the luxury tax, and a lot of teams are backing off because of that, which is a good thing. More parity in baseball, I think. But if you have a contract that eats up part of your cap, I mean, think about the biggest reasons why the Chiefs let Eric Berry and Justin Houston go. Two big reasons. One, big hit against the cap. They cut him to save money, they're aging players, and they're injury prone. Those are the three reasons.
Yeah.
Now you're bringing a guy that isn't injury prone, that is younger, in his prime, but you just gave a lot of money. Now, how much it's going to count against the cap each year, we haven't seen that yet. That's not official yet. So that's why I worry a little bit about the money the Chiefs are putting out there, but I would need to wait and reserve my opinion on whether I think it's a good or a bad contract, because I need to know how's it going to fall when it comes to the cap next year and the year after, when you're going to have to sign Mahomes to an extension, or you should, if you do somehow change your mind about Tyreek Hill, or maybe there's a player that, you know, plays great this year, younger player, and the Chiefs say, hey, we got to re-up this guy long-term. Maybe that's a Derek Nnadi. Maybe he has a breakout year, and you got, wow, we got to spend the money on this guy. He really improved. Who knows what the case may be. So, or maybe it's a young guy you draft, and in a couple of years you're ready to spend a lot of money on him, or you know he's the real deal. That's what I worry about, is if you have a contract that is kind of fat on the books, does that prevent you from improving other parts of the team? The other thing that scares me about this deal, I'm not so worried about the first-round draft pick. I don't think you can find a guy with Frank Clark's impact at the 29th overall pick. Could be wrong. I'm not really horribly upset they gave up a second next year, because they have 2 seconds next year. So I can live with that. But I don't know, man. Just these big contracts don't seem to work out very often. And
that's as a Chiefs fan why I don't like it. You know, maybe it works out for other teams and I don't know about it. But as a Chiefs fan, it's just like, it seems like every time we give a defensive player a lot of money, it
doesn't work.
It just, there's injuries or something. So for some reason, it gets derailed.
Yeah. And I think I keep coming back to this because I've been mixed on this trade. I am all for the Chiefs going for it. I'm cool with that. And this seems to me a little bit like the Royals trade for Johnny Cueto. A little bit. Because when we talked about it back in 2015 when the Royals traded Johnny Cueto, and a lot of Royals fans were like, all right, we got Johnny Cueto. You gave up a lot for Johnny Cueto.
Yes.
Now, all those guys turn out to not be that great of pitchers. I mean, Finnegan's not even with the Reds anymore. But at the time, they were three top prospects, and that depleted the Royals minor league system. And we said at the time, this is a great trade, but you're going to pay for it down the line in a few years. And if you win the World Series, it is a fantastic trade. If you don't win the World Series, you've mortgaged the future to win now. So it's a feast or famine type of predicament. And it worked out. And we said, great. Great trade. And we were cool with the Royals stinking and starting to go south the last few years. We knew it was coming. We tried to warn Royals fans. Some Royals fans were like, oh, well, oh, now they're all mad because Royals lose 100 games again. Listen, you got your World Series championship. I will take I said it before, I'll take 10 horrible seasons if that means we win the World Series every 10 years. I'll take 9 bad seasons. I'm for it. I know Dusty is too. So having said that, I think there's some similarities here. Now, the Chiefs aren't giving up their whole minor league system, okay? But they are giving up 2 high draft picks, 1 this year, 1 next year. They're giving a lot of money that might prevent them from spending in other areas to improve to a guy that has a few issues in his background, although I wouldn't really call them red flags per se, but they are things that you need to consider. And you're all in. I mean, that's what Dayton Moore was when he made the trades for Zobrist and for Cueto. He was all in. He put all his chips in the middle of the table and said, we're going for it. And I loved it.
Oh, yeah.
But there was a big risk if they didn't win at all. And we've seen that. But it was worth it because they won it all. My concern is that the Chiefs are all in because they're trying to win during the window when Mahomes' contract is cheap, which is basically this year and next year. And they're going to give him an extension if he stays healthy and everything. And I worry that the Chiefs are mortgaging or could mortgage some of Mahomes' years down the line, even though he'd be on the fat contract at 35, 40, 45 million a year. I'm worried they're maybe all in too soon in a way that once again, this could work. It could absolutely work. This could put them over the hump. The Chiefs win the Super Bowl, then it's a great trade. And I'm okay with it. And I'm not going to go on record and say I think this is a horrible trade. I'm kind of in between. But if this doesn't work out and the Chiefs don't win the Super Bowl this year or next year, and Frank Clark isn't the player that he was even in Seattle, which, you know, you think he's going to get better, but who knows? He's in with a different team, organization, different coaching staff. If this doesn't work out, does this set the Chiefs back to where they, in essence, when we look back at this 3, 4, 5 years from now and say and point to the Frank Clark trade and say that's where the Chiefs shortened their window? Because they were all in for a couple of years instead of, hey, we're going to be good for 10 to 15 years as long as Mahomes is healthy. You see where I'm going with that?
Yeah.
And the Patriots, there's the big thing I come back to. The Patriots don't do this. And I know some people think the Patriots cheat, and that's fine. And technically they have before. But I like what the Chiefs are doing. And maybe call me crazy, but this whole offseason, I've liked what the Chiefs have been doing. Contrary to 610 Sports Kansas City, who wants to rail on everything the Chiefs do, I felt like the Chiefs were doing the right thing. Cutting bait with guys that are old, guys that are fat contracts on the books, and then they got all kinds of cap flexibility when they made those moves. They got a Tyrann Mathieu. They got an Okafor for not long-term commitments, no longer than 3 years. They got a new defensive coordinator. They're changing their scheme. They've got more draft picks this year in the earlier rounds. And I really like what they're doing, and I thought they were doing a lot of what they were doing it the Patriot way, in my opinion, with the exception of Mathieu. Tyrann Mathieu. They brought him in 3 years, $42 million. But they didn't break the bank. But the Patriots, have the Patriots ever done anything like this? Because I don't think they have.
No, they don't overspend.
They don't overspend.
They'll go out and make a splash or something, but it's not like they're going to extend a guy for
They made a trade for Michael Bennett from the Eagles this offseason.
You know, and they went and got Randy Moss, but they didn't spend a lot of money on him.
A fifth-round draft pick.
It was financially a great move every time they do anything like this. You know, they didn't extend Michael Bennett for 40 years.
No, they buy low.
Yeah, exactly.
They buy low and they sell high. They don't buy high. And that's what I think the Chiefs have done. I think they bought high.
Oh, yeah, and without question.
What worries me because that's not something the Patriots would do. I'm not saying you have to do it the Patriot way, but when there's an organization that's won 6 Super Bowls and they're in the Super Bowl AFC title game How many years in a row now they've been NFC title game? Like 8 or something?
I think it was 8, yeah.
I mean, they're doing something right. I would use them as the model.
And oh, yeah.
And by the way, you can use it as a model because Tom Brady is a franchise quarterback. Now, you know, if the Denver Broncos using the Patriots as a model right now, it won't work because they don't have a franchise quarterback. The Chiefs do now. You know, I don't think the Patriot way would have worked for the Chiefs with Alex Smith at quarterback. But I think the Patriot way for the Chiefs works with Patrick Mahomes at quarterback. You take care of your quarterback, and then, you know, the Richard Seymours of the world who are ready for big, fat contract coming off a career year, like, hey, you know what, dude, we're good. Oh, left tackle wants a lot of money. He's starting to bellyache about his pay. Ship him off to the Buccaneers for a backup tight end. I mean, that's the Patriots' way. This is not something the Patriots would do. Having said that, maybe this is what the Chiefs have to do to overcome the Patriots' way, is be aggressive and go get a guy they really like in Frank Clark. So I don't know how you feel about this trade overall and your initial reaction. My initial reaction was kind of subdued. I was like, I don't know about this. It wasn't, oh, that's horrible or that's great. It was, I don't know about this. That was my reaction.
Oh, I immediately had two reactions. Mm-hmm. The first reaction is, that dude's a great player. I'd love to have him. I mean, we need that on our defense. Yeah. Obviously, you need an impact defensive end after you've gotten rid of Justin Houston and Dee Ford.
Right.
Guys that in the old system, in the old scheme, were able to do those kind of things. And you're sitting here like, I don't know if Okafor really moves the needle for me, you know, from that standpoint. Frank Clark moves the needle. There's no question about that with his play on the field. And then there's the other side of it where it's like, the Chiefs are dealing with enough of these cases with domestic violence, and that's going to come up. Everybody's going to talk about it. Not everybody, but a lot of people are going to bring it up.
Sure.
And then the money came out, and I'm like, oh, yikes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm kind of the same way. It's like you're in the middle of two different reactions because you're excited. There's no question if he's healthy, he's going to help this defense.
Right.
But there's always that question that we talked about and thought about when your example when the Royals traded for Zobrist and Cueto. We've given up a lot of our future here. Mm-hmm. And this isn't giving up your future in players, but it is in possible players and money that you can spend on those players. It's two different concepts here.
Not having Frank Clark on the roster would be more cap flexibility, which they had before they signed him yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a different concept, but the same
yes,
idea.
It is.
And you know, you're not giving up players, but you might be.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, that's the thing is that's why you're in the middle. And it's the same way for me. If the Chiefs go next year, have like a top 10 defense,
mm-hmm.
roll through, win a Super Bowl, you're going to be like, oh, that was worth it. And if Frank Clark has a good year, you know, he can't be just sitting out not doing anything. But if they would roll through and win a Super Bowl, you're not even going to think much about that future part of it. And that's the same thing that happened with Cueto and Zobrist when they came in. You know, we didn't think as much after they were hoisting that trophy on the 1st of November.
I'd have to go back and look at the numbers. I think this is close. I think the money on the books for the Chiefs with Ford, if he was signed to a franchise deal, was $16 million. D Ford, I'm talking about, before they traded him. Barry, I believe, against the cap, was counting $13.5 or $14 million this year.
It was $13.5, yeah.
And I think Houston was about the same. So that's $44 million, okay? The Chiefs signed Matthew 3 years, $42 million. I don't know how it's an average of $14 million a year, so let's just say 14. And then Frank Clark, they signed, but see, that's misleading too because you got to see how it sets up in the contract-wise. But I guess what I'm trying to say is they spent less, I'm pretty confident saying this, at least for this upcoming season, the Chiefs will have less on the books tied up with Frank Clark and Tyrann Mathieu versus D. Ford, Justin Houston, Eric Berry. Do you think the Chiefs are better off with Frank Clark and Tyrann Mathieu instead of Eric Berry, Justin Houston, and D. Ford? Do you think the Chiefs are a better team with two players in place of those three?
Yes.
I agree.
Because I think they've made enough other...
I agree.
You know...
I agree.
What's the... I can't think of the word I'm looking for, but, you know...
Right.
They've made enough moves that help on the other parts that they've lost.
So if you believe the Chiefs are a better team today... Forget the money, forget the draft picks. If you think the Chiefs are a better team today with Tyrann Mathieu and Frank Clark, the two star acquisitions in the offseason, compared to not having Barry, Ford, and Houston. You've replaced Barry, Ford, and Houston with Mathieu and Clark. And granted, they've got Okafor they got, and they traded for Ogda from Cleveland. I know they got other guys in the puzzle, like you said. But if you want to just talk about the marquee guys and the guys that cost you a lot of money, Barry, Houston, Ford are off the books. You add Matthew, you add Clark, and you give up a couple of draft picks. You didn't have to give up draft picks for Matthew. He was a free agent. I think if you make it as simple as that, then you have to sit here and say, this is that it sounds all good. Sign me up. Yeah. And I think there are a lot of people yesterday were more caught up in the Chiefs gave away two draft picks instead of one. I didn't see as many people worried about the money because, one, once again, the 5 years isn't guaranteed. And $63 million, that's the price of paying business. I mean, there are Chiefs fans all ready to go get Marcus Lawrence from the Cowboys. Would it cost you the same amount of money? Now, as soon as I saw the Chiefs had traded for Frank Clark, I'm like, well, they're going to have to give the guy $100 million. So the money didn't bother me a ton because I knew it was coming if they make that move.
Sure.
The question is that the right move to go grab a guy and commit that much money or that much in a guaranteed signing bonus and how you structure the contract? Is he worth that and the combination of draft picks? And the answer, there is no correct answer right now because we don't know.
Yeah. I think that I'm not worried at all about those draft picks. The thing about
I'm
the
not
draft
really
picks,
either. You know, especially since you have another second.
Here's the thing is what people forget to understand in these kind of deals. Frank Clark is your 29th draft pick of this year's draft.
That's right.
That's just what
like,
he is.
Just like when they traded Alex Smith.
Alex Smith was your second round draft pick that year.
Yep. There was no second round quarterback who was going to be as good as Alex Smith, more than likely.
And are you going to get a guy that can step into your system and play defensive end at 29 like Frank Clark? No, you're not. He's your 29th pick. Now, obviously, you gave up the second round next year, but again, you gave up your lower second round pick for next year. You still got a second round pick.
Right.
And who knows? Like you said, Brett Veach likes to trade. Mm-hmm. He might like to trade out of the first round next year and get that back.
He might.
You never know how that's all going to work, or he might.
Trade up.
He might trade up and get rid of his first round again next year. Who knows? But, you know, it's a situation where you just got those things you got to play out and let play out and wait before you can make that decision on whether it was bad to give up that second draft pick.
According to the experts that break down the value of trade and picks and this and that, almost everybody is saying Seattle got the best of the Chiefs in this trade.
Yeah.
Seattle got more value back. Well, good for the Seahawks. But if the Chiefs win a Super Bowl this year and then they stink after this year, it was worth every penny, just like Johnny Cueto and the Royals.
Yes.
I mean, honestly, if the Chiefs win the Super Bowl this year, it's worth it.
The future you worry about later.
That's right. And that's the part
I was saying. If you win, you don't worry about it, and you worry about it later.
And that's the part I like about this move, just like I did with Johnny Cueto at the time with the Royals. A very similar situation is I like the we're in it to win it, and our goal is a Super Bowl, and we're not satisfied. I love that because there are some organizations like, oh, we just stand pat, and we'll be there again next year. And that doesn't usually work out very well.
No.
You always are changing your roster. Let's see, what else here? Now, so the Chiefs will be, their first pick will be on Friday. In the second round, they'll have picks number 61 and 63. They might need some offensive line help. Corner is a spot I think they could use some depth there. But odds are they're not going to come up with an impact player in the draft now. But I'd argue at 29, it might not have been an impact player either. And Jared Allen, by the way, was an impact player. He was a fourth-round pick. The guy the Chiefs just traded for, Frank Clark, was a second-round pick. So the Chiefs could get the impact guy at 61. Everybody, Justin Houston was a third-round pick, right?
Yeah,
wasn't he?
I'm pretty sure.
He fell because of a failed drug test.
Yeah.
And Jamal Charles was a third-round draft pick. Kareem Hunt was a third-round draft pick. So it's not like you gave up everything for Frank Clark. You gave up a 29th overall pick, and you gave up a second-round pick next year that'll probably, if the Chiefs go deep in the playoffs, will be almost a third-round pick because it'll be so late in the second round. So I'm not all worried about the picks either because the Chiefs have other picks. All right, let's hear from the GM, Brett Veach. The Chiefs will not be on the clock tomorrow night unless they trade up into the first round. Tomorrow night, first-round NFL draft. We'll talk more about it tomorrow on the Sports Ticket. We'll hear more from Brett Veach about it. Then Friday and then Saturday, the rest of the draft. Here's Veach on what you're looking for with your picks in the draft.
We're just looking to find another great player, period, offense or defense. I think the cool thing about having the league MVP is, you know, he makes people around them that much better. So that's a luxury we have. And if we can get him another tool, we absolutely will. But I think in general, we're just looking to find playmakers on both sides of the football. I don't think we are going to be geared toward offense now because Pat is so good. But we're also aware that Pat is so good. So if there's somebody out there that can make him even better, we'll be all for it. But I think just in general, I think we just want to add playmakers anyway, you know, and that includes special teams too.
All right, Duster, you're the GM of the Chiefs. I've anointed you with that position right now. And if I asked you the question off the record, but on the record since we're doing a show here, and I told you I need to know what position is of most dire need. What position now? And there's a difference between this question and what I'm trying to say. The Chiefs, I think, are in a position where they can take the best available player regardless of position. I mean, the only place
that's
they're not.
That's my favorite part of what they've done in the offseason.
Right. And that's exactly right. And that's what Veach has said. You know, they signed Breshawn Breeland. They signed Okafor. They traded for Ogda. They got draft picks. They got Matthew. They got Clark. They got Damien Wilson, who's not a known commodity, but he's 26, a linebacker. So they don't have to overreach in the draft. They can pick whatever. They might go wide receiver second round. They might go a wide receiver tight end. You lost Demetrius Harris. Kelsey's 29. They might go for a wide receiver in a corner. They might go two offensive linemen. We don't know what they're going to do. The only thing I think we know is they're not going to draft a quarterback. But they might go for a running back. You never know. Damian Williams on a two-year deal, and we don't know if he can hold up the whole year. They got Carlos Hyde as a free agent. There is an opening at running back, that third running back spot, perhaps. The Chiefs can go in about any direction. So if you're the GM and you had the draft on need, I'm not talking best player available, because I think that's what the Chiefs will do, and that's what they should do, in my opinion. But if you're drafting on need, what's the number one position on your chart for need as the GM of the Chiefs right now, Dusty Dynas? What position do you feel like you have to address more than any other?
It's tough for me, like, because of all the guys they've signed, they've filled some of those needs, and it's like, I still want a corner. I know that.
That's where I'm at.
I still, and Breland's going to be a good guy there, but they need corners, and they have for, like, two or three years now.
And you're a passing league. You can't have enough good corners. And, I think they got to go corner myself.
That's where I keep coming back to. I mean, my brain keeps wanting to go somewhere else, but I keep coming back, and that's what I said last year, too.
Right.
I keep coming back to corner, and then they waited until the sixth round and got Tremont Smith.
Yeah.
Nobody knew.
They did trade and get Jarvarius Ward, who now might be a starter. We liked what he did last year. They got Breland. I'm with you. I think corner is the biggest position because at safety, they like Armani Watts.
Yeah.
So I think they feel good there. They got Sorensen. They got Matthew, who can move around. I think they feel good at safety. I don't think they're going to draft a safety, and I think that's too high in a second round anyway. Corner, I think, is the biggest need. I think Hitchens will be better in the new system in a 4-3 with Spagnuolo. He had a disappointing year last year as a free agent signing. I think Damian Wilson will be a good guy there. I think Dorian O'Daniel will fit better. I think Speaks will fit better. Passing now, I don't know if he's going to have any impact. And he might be a guy they're going to let go because you got Okafor, Ogda, and you've got Speaks and now Clark, and then you got Nnadi and Chris Jones. I mean, I don't see where the Chiefs really have to do anything on the defensive line.
No.
Unless they got a guy that's really huge and big, like the guy that used to play for the Ravens, the Nnadi guy. Nnadi?
Haloti Nnadi.
Yeah, Nnadi. You can find a gigantic, huge run stuffer. That might be a guy to go for because you've got enough guys to rush the passer. So in running situations, that guy's on the field, and then you can take him off the field in passing situations. You know, maybe Derek Nottie's going to turn into that guy. I mean, they like his upside.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I kind of like where they're at, and I think Spagnuolo, by the stunts and the blitzes he's going to do, it's going to be a lot different to where the Chiefs will be better against the run. So I'm okay with linebacker. I'm okay at the defensive front. I think my question mark is maybe a little depth at safety. I'm a corner. The offensive line, you got a new center in Austin Ryder. You might look at Dalton Reisner.
I would say center, but, you know, you're talking about obviously position of need, but then you think about do you take a center that high?
Right, and I wouldn't take him probably second round.
Yeah.
But if you can find an offensive lineman that's versatile, Dalton Reisner, Kansas State might be a second-round pick of the Chiefs. He can move around. He can play. He could play guard. He's smart enough to play guard. He can play guard. He can play tackle.
He played every position.
I mean, he could probably play center too.
He came in as a center, right? That's what his position was.
But I'm saying he can. He's multidimensional. He can play multiple positions. I think that's a guy that would be a good pickup. If the Chiefs, the 61st pick on Friday, take Dalton Reisner at K-State, I'll be happy. Or if they take offensive lineman, that I'm okay with that instead of going with a corner. But then I think corner next. What about wide receiver? I think the Chiefs would love to get another weapon for Patrick Mahomes because Watkins is injury prone. Kelsey's getting up there a little bit. We don't know what Tyreek Hill's situation is going to be, but we'll play this cut tomorrow. But Brett Veach, when talking about the wide receivers the other day in his press conference, he brought up Byron Pringle by name, the former K-Stater.
Yeah.
He was very high on Pringle, who, of course, had an unfortunate injury.
Great preseason.
He had a great preseason. Hurt. He got hurt in the very last quarter of the preseason, and it was out for the year in IR. So maybe the Chiefs are more than happy with what they got, and DeMarcus Robinson getting better. So the Chiefs may not be looking at wide receiver. They might surprise us. They might go running back or an offensive lineman. But I do think corner and maybe some offensive line help would be my top two targets.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you there.
So the Chiefs are all in, and of course, you're going to beat New England. You need to get pressure on the quarterback. And we've seen Tom Brady, when he has pressure, like the Giants did with Spagnuolo as the defensive coordinator, spoiled their perfect season that one year. Why? Because Brady was on his back a lot. And every quarterback that gets pressure isn't as good as they were when they sit in the pocket all day, like Brady did against the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. So I guess, you know, I see some people not happy with this trade. I see some people that are ecstatic about the trade. I see some people that are kind of mixed. I would say you and I are kind of in the middle, mixed. But I'm all for this. If you think this is your window and you want to go for it this year and you're so close, and we know defense was a major problem, you've certainly addressed it by what you've done so far in the offseason. I just think it's a year too late. But I don't think they fully knew what they had in Patrick Mahomes either. And I mean, they knew they had a star when they moved up to go to the 10th pick. They did. They knew they had a guy that they thought was going to be a great quarterback. But they never dreamt he'd lead them to the AFC title game last year.
No, and none of us did.
And that's why
there's
they didn't have a sense of urgency last year to fire Bob Sutton.
Yeah.
Now they say, oh, my God, we've got a guy in his prime at 23 who should only get better. We got to go for it now.
Like, theoretically, he close. Shouldn't even have hasn't even hit his prime yet.
No,
theoretically, and like you said, he's 23.
And theoretically, with that bad of a defense, he should have never made the AFC title game and have home field advantage.
Exactly. There's no way.
That's why, as a Chiefs fan, you're pretty excited. So Frank Clark is a member of the Chiefs, pending his physical, which he's going to take today or tomorrow. All right, moving on to not so positive stuff. The Royals, well. You know, I will say this about the Royals. Even though they're 7-17, lost to the Rays again last night, 5-2, they hit home runs.
Drilled to center field. Kiermaier turns his back to the infield, and that ball is gone. And Martin Maldonado, who flied out to deep center field last time up, hits his first home run as a Royal.
Homer Bailey last night was awful after being great. He left with the bases loaded, nobody out in the second inning. Went one inning, four walks, Royals, five straight losses. For once, the starting pitching just wasn't there. And Ned talks about Homer Bailey and his performance, or lack thereof.
Yeah, just one of the night. Just a night where he struggled from the onset. He lowered down a little bit, and just location, just battle location. Just one of those days where it was just off. And, you know, we have the off day Thursday, but he's the only one that's not going to get an extra day because we're flipping him. So I'm like, okay, it's obvious that he's not on tonight, and I'm not going to, you know, try to get a length out of him just to get through the inning, get through the game. Hopefully, if we could hold it right there and battle back offensively, you know, we'll see what happens. And the bullpen did a fantastic job.
Yeah, they would after the starter was horrible. That's just the way it rolls.
Exactly.
For the Royals. Hunter Dozier out of the lineup with back spasms. He's been hitting tar off the ball. Hunter Dozier has been.
Yes.
The Royals are hitting home runs, but they're not winning games. 7-17. They get the Rays again today in the final game of the series. And for the Royals, it'll be Jake Junis on the hill. Brad Keller, by the way, as we predicted, dropped his appeal after he did his last start. He really actually won't miss a start. They'll just flip the days around the rotation because of off day Thursday. And thus the suspension does nothing.
Around, and he didn't see. He was about to say why.
Yeah.
We're flipping things around, so he's the only one that's not going to get a rest.
We said that when the suspension came down. This is no suspension because you're a starting pitcher. If you have an open day, an off day, it doesn't affect you at all. You can just adjust your rotation. You might start one day later than normal, but you don't miss a start. And that's the good news for the Royals. The bad news is they're 7-17. Back to the Chiefs for a moment. There are some rumors out there. Patrick Peterson, maybe we'd be a trade candidate for the Chiefs. I don't see that happening.
Not anymore.
No, I don't. One, you're going to need a lot of money or take on his contract. Two, you have to give up draft picks for Peterson. He's older than Clark. Peterson's 28. Would I take him? Sure.
Oh, in a heartbeat.
But it would have to be a Patriots type of deal where you bought low.
Yeah.
And you know the Cardinals aren't going to sell low. So
no.
I highly, highly doubt Patrick Peterson's a Chief. But if he is, then we're really, really in it to win.
Other than scratch corner and just get an offensive line.
There you go, and we're set. Let's play ball. Let's play ball, right?
Don't even need to use the other six draft picks or whatever,
no,
five or six draft picks.
Just trade them all away. We don't want them. We got enough players. All right, the NBA last night. Not a good night for Dusty Spurs. Not a good night for my Thunder. But, wow, what a way to win a game in a series last night in Portland.
A chance to send the Thunder home. Lillard, long-range three. And it's good! At the buzzer! Damian Lillard! Are you kidding me?
Damian Lillard outplayed Russell Westbrook this whole series, even the game that the Blazers lost. Damian Lillard is a guy we said the other day is undervalued, underappreciated, and because he's in the Pacific Northwest, a lot of people don't know how great he is. I watched him throughout his career. He's an outstanding player. He's getting better. That's what's scary.
Yeah,
he's getting better. And there are some comparisons, what he did this series to Steph Curry, taking these deep threes. He's kind of Steph Curry before the Warriors got really good, because under Mark Jackson, Curry had to take some really bad shots. And this was a... You could say it's a bad shot. It was a 37-footer, and he settled for that. Milked the clock down with 15 seconds. Paul George is on him. What's Paul George supposed to do? I mean, you know, I don't want to hear. I remember we had somebody here a couple years ago saying LeBron James played horrible defense on Kevin Durant on a 30-foot pull-up three. Like, what do you want him to do as a defender? You don't. You want to make a guy shoot a 30-footer. You don't want him to go in for a dunk. That was not bad defense. And somebody out there says Paul George had bad defense on a guy that chucked a 37-footer at the buzzer. I would say you don't know a lot about basketball, because the whole goal as a defender is to make a guy take a tough shot or a shot that's a low percentage shot. And Lillard, he made it easier on George because he settled for it. George said it was a bad shot after the game. It wasn't a bad shot. It went in. And it's a bad shot if Steven Adams of the Thunder is taking it.
Yeah.
It's not a bad shot. Damian Lillard can make those deep threes. And he made some amazing, tough, hard, long shots last night. I mean, he earned his 50 points.
Oh, yeah.
And Russell Westbrook had a triple-double. I think he had 33 points last night, but he took 31 shots. Lillard took 33 shots, only two more, and scored 17 points more or whatever it was. Here's Billy Donovan, who I think is going to be out of a job. Billy Donovan, the head coach of the Thunder, on Damian Lillard's shot at the end to win it and end the series and send the Blazers in the next round, and the Thunder, they're done.
I thought we gave a really, really good effort, but he was really, he made some tough shots. I mean, you got to give him credit. I mean, I think at the night he had and the shots that he made epitomized the last shot of the game. Those are kind of some of the shots he made throughout the first half.
Lillard also had some fine assists, because when the guy's red hot, which he was, then you got to double him. You got to give help all the time. He set up his teammates for open threes, layups, dunks. And here's the thing last night. The Thunder actually played well. They really did. Jeremy Grant was really good. Westbrook had 29 points, 14 assists, 11 rebounds, but he took 31 shots. So Lillard, with just two more shots, scored 21 more points. Lillard was 10 of 18 from three, which is sensational. You can take 18 threes a game, you're going to make 10. Every coach will give you the green light in that situation. Paul George was fantastic, 36 points, 14 of 20 from the floor. Dennis Schroeder, he was really good. I mean, the Thunder did everything they needed to do to win last night except win.
Yeah.
And they were up 13 with about 5.5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter in Portland. They would have been back on serve, going back to OKC in regards to, you know, getting that game back. They lost in OKC, but still wouldn't have home court advantage, because Portland had home court advantage for the series. But Damian Lillard won this game last night. It wasn't that the Thunder lost it, in my opinion. It was Lillard just making unbelievable shots and setting up his teammates, and he looked like the best player in the NBA last night.
Hard to argue.
And this series, really.
Yeah. Oh, the series, no question. He was outstanding the whole way.
Oh, my Lord.
He's got something with Westbrook that gives him something extra, it seems like. And he was outstanding.
Even the game when they lost, he had 25 points in the third quarter at OKC when he was held. I think he had like 2 points in the first half, and he didn't score in the fourth quarter. But third quarter was insane and kept the Blazers in it. Came down the wire, and the Thunder won. That was the only game the Thunder won. Now here's the question. Listen, you got Paul George. Last year you had Carmelo, Paul George, and Westbrook. This year you have Westbrook, you have George. I thought the Thunder would go deep in the playoffs, but in the West, there's no easy first-round series, as we know. The Thunder have lost in the first round the last 3 years. Is Billy Donovan going to be fired? They fired Scott Brooks for not going deep in the playoffs, and he won 50
games.
Scott Brooks
for not making the playoffs because KD was hurt late in the season.
And they also, because he didn't go deep in the playoffs. Yeah. Although that 1 year made the finals.
Made the finals once.
Right.
Listen, I'm sitting here thinking right when he said that, I was like, I wonder if the Thunder would like to have Scott Brooks back.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't as bad as I think they thought it was. Understand what conference you're playing basketball in, and understand that it's not always going to be easy in this conference.
Would you fire Billy Donovan?
I would.
I would, too. I would, too.
Whether that's fair or not, I probably would.
I think you got to change the voice. I will say this. I am a Westbrook fan, but I'm not as big a fan as I have been in the past. I love Paul George. I think, honestly, Paul George is my favorite Thunder player. And I love that the Thunder got him, and I'm so happy that he signed long-term with the Thunder. But Westbrook's antics get a little bit old now for me. I like him better than Draymond Green. He's not as bad as Draymond Green, per se, maybe. But he does this, you know, trash talk and stuff and whatever. But the problem with Russell Westbrook for me is that there's just too many times in games, and there's times he takes over and he's great, but he's not a great shooter. No. He's not a great shooter, but he takes too many shots. In my opinion, he takes too many shots. And that was, I think, a major reason why KD left.
Oh, without question.
Because you had two guys that were the alpha dogs wanting the ball, time in their hands, and those two hogged the ball and took all the shots in Game 6 against Golden State a few years ago when they had a chance to close the series. After sharing the ball the whole series and getting up 3-1, they got away from it, trying to close it, and everything changed after that. The Thunder are not a better team. You know, they were a better team without Carmelo. There's no question. And not having Andre Robertson, who's an outstanding defender, all year long, that hurt them, although he's a liability offensively. But you got the Schroeder as a backup point guard, a big improvement. Adams is a borderline all-star. He's a good center. Jeremy Grant got better. You got Westbrook. You got George. I think the Thunder have quite a bit of talent. You got two superstars. How do you lose in the first round 3 years in a row? And none of those games went seven. Last year they lost in 5 or 6 to the Jazz.
Five, this year lost, I think last year too.
They lost in 5 this year. The Portland, a team they swept during the regular season.
Yeah.
And your star player Russell Westbrook had 2 pretty bad games.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody.
Do you trade Russell Westbrook?
So back.
Is a problem the players or the coach?
I just don't feel like if they continue to play the way they are, that they're ever going to win anything with Russell Westbrook. He's got to change the way he plays and understand that he's got Paul George on his team and can rely on him a little bit more. That's why Kevin Durant left.
Right.
If you're Kevin Durant, you are clearly better than Russell Westbrook.
Yes.
There's no question about that. Skill-wise, everything you do, full package, you're better than. I realize Westbrook's averaged a triple-double for 3 straight years.
Sure.
Now, but
there's games he pads him.
Yeah. You're better than Russell Westbrook, and I want to be the guy at the end of the games. Sometimes I wasn't.
Right.
And Russell Westbrook tried to play more hero ball even than I did, and he got a – Kevin Durant even got accused of that, the hero ball stuff. Mm-hmm. But Russell Westbrook was even worse. And so it's like, why am I going to stick around here? You're lucky that you got a guy in Paul George that can doesn't have a problem with that. You know, he's going to – but Russell Westbrook needs to realize – he's got Paul George, too.
Right. And he does sometimes.
Yeah, he does. But, I mean, in a grand scheme, when you come down to this time of the year, understand what your strengths are.
Well, here's the question, and this is probably where Kevin Durant would sit here and ask this question. Last night, must-win game for the Thunder in Portland, and it was working until the last 5 minutes. They're up 13 points. Paul George, 20 shots, which is quite a few. 20 shots, 14 of 20. Russell Westbrook took 31. He's the point guard. There's the problem.
Yeah.
Paul George had it going, 14 to 20. George should be the guy taking 30 shots. Now,
exactly.
I'm okay with Westbrook taking 30 shots if he's on.
Yeah.
But when you're not on and another guy on, it's one thing if you're not on and nobody's on or nobody wants to take the shot and you're forced to take it. I get that. Paul George isn't afraid to take the shot. He was 14 of 20. He shot 70% from the floor. How does the point guard take 31 shots and 11 more than the guy that's 14 of 20? That's on, I hate to say it, but that's on Russell Westbrook.
The guy with the ball.
And that's also on the coach a little bit to get him to do that. But we have so many egos in NBA, which leads me back to the original question. Billy Donovan, would you fire him? I think most people say he probably is going to go, or they would say they'd fire him. But the question is he the problem, or is Russell Westbrook the problem, and doesn't matter who you bring in as head coach?
Yeah.
Unless it's Phil Jackson. Maybe Phil Jackson can do it.
That's why I prefaced it, saying, I don't know if it's fair, but yes, I would fire Billy Donovan. You got to have a point guard that understands not only what he has on his team, but also what's going on in a certain game.
Right.
And listen, for 15 years, I never worried about that with my favorite team.
Right.
Because Tony Parker, if he was on, he was going to shoot. If he wasn't, he was going to find somebody else.
Right.
He never had to worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, some teams get lucky in that regard. You know, James Harden doesn't always have the ball in his hands, but when he does and he's shooting a lot and he's on, then, yeah, roll with it. If he's not, then go somewhere else.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to understand situational basketball, too, not
right.
just what you have and what your skills are.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
I don't think Russell Westbrook has ever understood that. Probably even when he was at UCLA.
It took Kevin Durant, a superstar, along with Russell, to get the NBA Finals once and should have beat the Warriors to make it to the Finals again, up 3-1. That tells you how great Durant was. Because Westbrook's really good.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, George is more of a guy that's going to take more of a back seat. Durant, not so much, although he has somewhat at Golden State. But Paul George isn't as much of the alpha dog as KD is. And I think KD is like, this isn't going to work with me and Russell. And so I got to go. And he did. And now KD can sit back and go, look what's happened. They got Paul George. They got a good team around him. And Russell's still chucking too many shots.
Yeah.
Okay, Toronto wins 115-96 over the Magic. They win that series 4-1 after losing game one. Kawhi Leonard, 27 points. The Nets lose to the Sixers. And the Sixers win 4 in a row after losing game one. And Dusty Spurs lose to the Nuggets last night, 108-90. Nuggets are in control most of that ball game, so the Nuggets have a chance to close it out in San Antonio in Game 6. And, you know, we did talk about this when the playoffs came out. We both were kind of thrilled. You were thrilled that the Spurs got the Nuggets. I was more than happy that the Thunder got the Trailblazers. But I remember we talked about it, and I said, the fact that we're so thrilled and people think that the Spurs and the Thunder are the favorites, even though they're 6 and 7 seeds, probably means they're both going to lose first round. We said that.
Yeah.
And here we are. Spurs are one game away from making that true.
I had this weird gut feeling at like 8 o'clock that last night was not going to go well.
Yeah.
And I don't get NBA TV, so I didn't get to watch it. But
which most of those games in the series have been on that.
Been through. That's the third one.
Yeah,
which is
unfortunate.
Yeah, they got out to a big lead, and I'm like, yeah, that's what I thought was going to happen. But, yeah, you're kicking yourself that you didn't hold 19 game two.
That's the one.
Because this series might be over.
Probably was over, yeah. Yep.
It literally might be over right now.
That's where you lost the series, possibly. Yep, you're right. Utah down 3-1 at Houston. You expect the Rockets to close it out tonight at home. The Clippers at Golden State, you expect Golden State to close that out at home as well, as Golden State's responded well after blowing that 31-point lead in game two. And I will say right now, I think the two best teams – in the NBA, or at least in the West, it's Houston and Golden State. And I think it's a shame they got to play in the Western Conference semifinals. As much as I was happy the Thunder avoided the Rockets and they slipped to a 4, for a basketball purist standpoint, for the NBA, the Rockets and the Warriors is the best matchup in the West.
Yeah.
Forget who else comes out.
Portland plays like they have. I could have fun watching the
They'd
Blazers
be fun to
and
watch.
Warriors. But, yeah,
but the only
those
team,
are the two best
The only
teams.
Team in the West that can beat the Warriors in 7, in my opinion, are the Rockets when they're healthy. And they should have last year if Paul didn't get hurt. And the Rockets took, I think, 3 out of 4 from Golden State this year. Not that that means anything regular season. But the Rockets aren't scared of the Warriors. They can play right there at the Warriors. So that's going to be very fascinating because you could have Portland against Denver in the Western Conference semifinals, which will be an entertaining series.
Oh, yeah.
But all the focus will be on the Rockets and the Warriors. It's going to feel maybe like the NBA Finals because that's what they said last year. When the Rockets blew the lead in the series, and mainly because Paul got hurt, of course, there, the Warriors came back and won 6 and 7. But a lot of people said that was the NBA Finals, and it was because Cleveland couldn't match up with Golden State last year. We knew that.
Yeah.
There's more balance in the East than we've had before, and there's no LeBron in the East anymore. I think the Raptors, I think the Bucks are capable. If the Celtics are right, I think those three teams are capable of giving the Warriors a run. But I think their biggest threat is the Houston Rockets, and they're going to play them in the second round.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. Okay, so a lot of excitement comes the NBA, and then Game 7. Ladies and gentlemen, there is no better thing in sports, I'm telling you, than Game 7s of a best-of-7 series. And last night, hockey, oh my.
Pass picked off at center ice by Erik Karlsson. In he comes. Turns to the head. Good going along.
Insane. Vegas, the Golden Knights, were up 3-2. Game 6, what looked like was in their pocket. Sharks came back, won that. Forced Game 7 at San Jose. Last night, Sharks are down 3-0. And in hockey, down 3-0 is a lot like being down 21-0 in the fourth quarter NFL game, or probably what, 7-0 in a baseball game? I mean, it's not good.
No.
And in the final period, you're down 3-0? in game seven against a good team, series is over, right?
Yeah, I went on to look at what the score was and how bad Vegas ended up winning because I knew they were up 3-0. And I was like, I wonder what the final was as I was putting my sports together. And I'm like, that just said that the Golden Knights tied it at 4 to send it to overtime. I'm like, what?
They were up 3-0. The Sharks were down 3-0, came back 3 goals in the final period to tie it and then take the lead. Then the Golden Knights tied it at 4-4, went to overtime. That was the game winner. That was the game winner. And by the way, game six, they won on, I think they were shorthanded on the final goal, if I remember right, for the Sharks.
Yeah.
That's insane, man. If you're a Golden Knight hockey fan, you're just in misery. You didn't even get out of bed this morning. You're like, are you kidding me? We choked a 3-0. Sure, I've been there. I know how chokes feel. Trust me, as teams that I've cheered on over the years. It hurts. It hurts. The Bruins beat the Maple Leafs 5-1. They win that series 4-3. Hurricanes Capitals, game seven tonight. Capitals, defending Stanley Cup champions, facing elimination tonight. Another terrific Game 7 slated in the Stanley Cup playoffs. The next round, it's the Stars versus the Blues, the Avs versus the Sharks. The Islanders will take on the winner of the Capitals Hurricane winner of tonight in Game 7. And the Blue Jackets will take on the Boston Bruins. That's an update on the NHL playoffs. Don't forget, we'll have coverage of Bullet Relays coming up on Friday throughout the day here on your number one source, High School Sports, KD Country 94. Thanks for tuning in. Ticket, have a great day.